It has been a turbulent decade here in Vancouver, to say the least.
Check me out, y'all.
Halford and Brough.
In your area.
That's right.
About to cause mass hysteria.
Sportsnet 650.
Hughes a drive. He scores.
I've never seen a young defenseman like Quinn Hughes.
It's halftime.
Horvat with two. Horvat with three. Patrick.
Look at this. I'm the captain.
It's halftime.
Now Besser off the drift wall. Accepted by Patterson. He scores.
It's halftime.
Playoff atmosphere. Look at the boys go. Crank it up. Let's go.
7:04 on a Thursday. It is Halford and Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. It is your home of the Vancouver Canucks. The Canucks and Oilers in action tonight. Canucks looking to snap their 6-game losing streak. Connor McDavid looking to get that much closer towards 100 points. That's a 7 o'clock puck drop. A reminder, you can hear everything pregame, actual game, postgame, all right here on Sportsnet 650.
They should start with a line brawl.
Why not? At this point.
The Canucks.
It's very en vogue right now. It's very in. Line brawls.
You have to the Oilers would be like, what is going on here?
Yeah. Why? What do we do? And a friendly reminder that the Halford and Brough Show in the morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca. When we originally booked our next guest, we're like, oh, good, we'll get an Oilers preview in there. It'll be great. But then everything changed. The world got different over the last 48 hours. So we bring on now Oilers Sportsnet analyst Louis DeBrusk here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Louis. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing this morning?
We're good, thanks. We've spent a lot of time not talking about the Canucks and Oilers game, but with good reason, because what happened last night between the Capitals and the Rangers was a big, big story. And we noticed that this story went well beyond just traditional hockey media. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone was either posting the clip of the fight or posting the screen cap of 11 players and the penalty box all jammed together. It was a throwback to an earlier time. Now, I ask this knowing, Louis, that twice in your NHL career, you hit the 19-fight plateau in a single season. That's a lot. But our poll question today, does fighting help or hurt the popularity of hockey in North America? We're curious to get your answer on that one.
Good question. I think certainly from a fan's perspective, I would say it helps.
Yep.
You know, I've always felt that, listen, the one thing about hockey that brings a lot of fans' attention to it is the fact that it's a physical sport. And that's what people like about it. That's what people love about it. And if that building, Madison Square Garden, would have been jam-packed, I don't think that... I honestly don't think there would have been a whole lot of people sitting down to watch the fights. You know what I'm saying? I think that the whole building would have been standing up. Now, listen, I understand it's a different time. It's a different game. We haven't seen that. But the one thing that I have noticed this year, guys, is that there have been some more acts of violence and more physicality and more intensity in the last month and a half than we've seen in a long time. And I just think that you've got players that are, you know, essentially living in a moving bubble, playing the same teams over and over again. That breeds contempt, and that breeds, for us, great hockey, but also emotions boil over every once in a while. The other aspect of this, and I think the thing that's really what's on people's mind is how the NHL Department of Player Safety handled this. You know, for me, you know, this is something that we've talked about for a long time. And it's about the protection of players on the ice and how the league is disciplining those players and how the league is controlling those situations. Now, when the league doesn't step in and control it to the satisfaction of the players in the NHL, this is what happens. So I fully expected something to happen, guys, in that game. I didn't think it was going to boil over the way that it did, but I thought there was going to be some sort of redemption. I thought there was going to be some sort of an answer, and I got to give the New York Rangers a little bit of credit the way they did. I mean, the Buchnevich cross-check, listen.
Yeah.
Once again, players protecting themselves. Players protecting themselves. You're going to go out there and you're going to, you know, start challenging certain players to fight. Other players are going to come over and say, no, fight me instead, and they're going to continue to push that button. Well, that's what happens. So I've always been a big advocate of never taking fighting out of the game. Maybe I'm in the minority now. I don't think so. I think if you were to silent poll it, I think you'd be shocked at the amount of players in the National Hockey League that still want fights in the game. And I think you'd be shocked at the amount of offensive skilled players that still want fighting in the game. Mm-hmm. So, because they know that those are the guys that save their bacon when it gets rough. Just ask Panarin how he feels about that. Listen, now, in that situation, Panarin did jump on his back first. He did get himself into that scrum, but it was because of what he did to Buchnevich first before he jumped on his back and went forward. All I'm saying, guys, is the players will protect themselves eventually. They will find a way to protect themselves. And I even jokingly said to a buddy of mine the other day that, you watch. I wouldn't be surprised if the New York Rangers load up next year. Have a couple tough guys in their lineup. And every time they play the Washington Capitals, this is how this whole cycle started back in the day, boys. And mm-hmm. you know what? It might not start to, it might not come back to the extent that it was back then, but there's certainly going to be a response.
Well, it's funny. We were talking about the, I can't remember exactly what season it was, but when Milan Lucic was playing for Boston and he ran over Ryan Miller, who was playing for the Buffalo Sabres, that created a fracture and a fissure in that organization that lasted an awfully long time. If I'm not mistaken,
an embarrassment in the fan base. The fans were embarrassed of it.
I think that's what spurred them on to go get John Scott, if I'm not mistaken. Like, it was a thing.
100%.
Yeah, it was a thing for a long time where they were like, the ghosts of Lucic running over Miller and nobody doing anything about it. It resonated with that fan base for a long time.
Well, it does, too, though. It really does. And listen, it's no different than having a Connor McDavid on your team. I'll use it in a different pretense,
sure, sure.
But when you have the best player in the game, it makes everybody better. It forces everybody to go out there and try and tailor their team to play against a Connor McDavid. And you go out and get the essential players to do that. A checking centerman, solid defenseman, a skating defenseman, whatever it takes. It's going to make you better. Now, I know that's in a different situation because it's not necessarily a negative. But in the world of the physical part of this game, that's how it works. If you're in a division where it's really tough, and the Washington Capitals, let's you know, speak clearly here. They've been a team that's always kind of crossed that line and played that physical brand of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Wilson's been at the top of that list. They now have Zdeno Chara on their mm-hmm. defense. Do you think they just went out and got him because he was 6'9" and he was an excellent defender? No. They got him because he is still one of the biggest, baddest guys in the league. And I'm sorry, you know when he's... I mean, there was like a force field around Chara in that game. Nobody
yeah,
wanted to go near him with a 10-foot ball. I mean, this guy's in his 40s. I fought this guy, for crying out loud, and nobody wanted to go near that guy. And you know what? I love Zdeno Chara. I love the fact that he brings that, and, you know, that's why they went out and got him. So... yeah, I do think that teams will make adjustments. I do think that teams will start to bring in players that can answer that bell on a more regular basis. Now, the problem is finding the right guys, and that's where, in my opinion, the game has changed a lot, is that because it's such a skilled, fast game now, players like myself, back in the day that were a fourth line, didn't play much, you knew what your role was, your enforcers, it's changed a bit in that regard, guys. The Tom Wilsons of the world aren't that easy to find. The Josh Andersons of the world are not that easy to find. So, but I'm telling you this right now, any players out there, young players like that are coming up, are going to be highly coveted in this league because those are the new enforcers in the game.
You know, you bring up another good point there. We were talking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN yesterday, and we were talking about the Tom Wilson situation in totality. And he said one interesting thing to note about this that not a lot of people talk about is that with all the suspensions that he's gotten and all the fines that he's gotten and all the we're trying to rehabilitate Tom Wilson, the Washington Capitals have never made an effort to try and change the way Tom Wilson plays. And I don't think they're ever going to. Like, you brought up a good point. The Washington Capitals play big, play tough, and play mean. And every time one of these situations comes down, you never hear about the owner or the general manager telling Tom Wilson to cool it because there's no point to. That's why they signed Tom Wilson. That's why they've got him out there. That's a whole dynamic of this, that he's a real asset for what the Capitals want to do on a nightly basis.
Not to mention that he bangs in 20 goals, too.
Yep.
Not to mention that he can play on the top line, your fourth line, your second, third. Honestly, listen, and I'm not going to sit here and rip apart Tom Wilson as a player, because I think he's a tremendous player. He's a big body, huge guy. He can skate. He's a punishing hitter, obviously, as we know that. He can fight, and he can put the puck in the back of the net. And he's won a Stanley Cup, and he was a big part of it. So, you know, I get all that. He's not going to change his nature, though. And that was, you know, I didn't like the hit earlier in the year on Brandon Carlo, the Boston Bruins. I mean, obviously, that's a personal thing for me. I get it. I watch the Bruins a lot. But I just didn't like there was no need for that type of a predatory hit in a guy that was in a bad situation, that was in a vulnerable position, from a guy that understands how punishing his hits are. So in that regard, guys, I 100% agree with you. He really hasn't tailored what he's done. I'll back that off. He did for a while, because there was a big stretch there where he didn't get any trouble. Okay, so where he didn't kind of have any of those hits, but then eventually it started to come back full circle again, and you know what? All of a sudden we're talking about Tom Wilson. So, you know, he literally uses a stick to cross-check a player down into the ice and then punches him when he's down on the ice. Now, listen, I'm all for scrums, guys. Don't get me wrong. A lot of stuff goes on in those scrums that, you know, doesn't go miss very much now because of all the cameras and everything that's going on. But every once in a while, you still do miss stuff inside where you don't really know what's going on, what's being said, all that. In the heat of the battle, when you feel someone jump on your back, listen, Tom Wilson was just throwing off an opponent very aggressively that was on his back. I had more of an issue with what he did to Buchnevich than what he did to Panarin. And I always say this, too, and this is the other aspect of it, and people might not like it, but if you're going to go into a scrum and you're going to grab the toughest guy on the ice, you better be prepared for what's coming your way.
Mm-hmm.
You better be prepared for the pushback. Because I can tell you, he doesn't look at you any different than anybody else. And that's coming from a guy that played a tough guy role, a physical role in the NHL. If I go into a scrum, and this is a funny story. Craig McTavish told me one day, I went into a scrum and a not-so-tough player came in and grabbed me. And after the game, he pulled me aside and he said, hey, he goes, you kind of let up on that guy. I'm like, well, you know, the guy's not really a tough guy. He doesn't, you know, he's not really, you know. He goes, yeah, but he dropped his gloves with you. He dropped his gloves with you.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, he made the decision to get into that altercation with you. It's not your choice to decide whether or not he deserves your full force or not. If he decides to drop the gloves with you, then bury him. And I always thought about that, and I was like, geez, you know, that's kind of, but you know what? He's right. You're on that ice. You make the decisions on the ice. Panarin was just doing what he should do. He's a teammate. He was just trying to protect one of his teammates. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him at all for jumping on Wilson's back. He should have. It's great for him. Unfortunately, it was a smaller guy going up against a bigger guy, and he ragdolled him, and he ended up getting hurt. And that's just part of it. But again, like I said, he's the one that initiated with Wilson after what he did to Buchnevich. So I just, you know, you have to look at it in that regard. Two wrongs don't make a right. But in the thick of things, guys, I can tell you, the heat of the battle, it's a free-for-all in there. It really is. But I didn't like what he did initially, and this is what I'm saying. He's always tinkering on that line. He's been suspended multiple times by the league. And I'm sorry, it's only a matter of time before he hurts somebody else.
It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking fighting with Louis DeBrusque, a good guy to talk fighting with. Louis, I've got the London Knights 1990-91 roster up here. You had 223 PIMs. Your teammate Barry Potomsky had 202, and then there were three other guys with over 100 PIMs. I'm looking at some more recent London Knights rosters, even the full season ones, and I'm really struggling hard to find a guy with over 100 penalty minutes. The CHL was the main feeder of tough guys into the NHL. Junior hockey doesn't have as much fighting anymore. There are some rules against having multiple fights now. Is that league, like, who is going to produce the tough guys of the future now?
You know, it's incredible, because we used to always debate this all the time, because there was a lot of college guys that came out and were really tough guys. Good buddy of mine, Jim Cummins, Mike Peluso, who was a longtime tough guy in the league.
Yeah, Kevin Bieksa is pretty tough.
Yeah, BX, you know, like, I mean, listen, George McPhee, I mean, when you watch some of his fight tape, and you'll know what I'm talking about. I know you look at George McPhee and you don't look at him in that regard. Well, just go watch some of his fights. That guy was tough as nails. But you know what? Here's the thing. I've always said this. I think it's naturally in people or it's not. So it's one of those things that's really hard to tap into. I mean, George Peros coming from Princeton, obviously a topic of discussion lately as far as the disciplinary stuff. But Big George, listen, he pretty much molded himself into a tough guy. But you have to have the right mindset to be able to do that. I remember playing against him early in his career when he came out of Princeton, his first couple games in the AHL. I mean, he was bombing around the ice, but he wasn't a physical tough guy. He didn't have that background, but he took it upon himself to work and to develop into that role, and he had a great career. He really did. But all I'm saying, though, is, guys, if it's in your nature, if that's something that's part of your DNA as a player, it doesn't matter where you come from. When the buttons are pushed, it'll come out, and we see it all the time. To me, honestly, I don't think it'll ever get back, guys, to having a designated enforcer. I just don't. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be that complete all-around player like the Andersons, like the Wilsons, you know, that can play a big physical game, but every once in a while they can throw down as well, too. And I love those players. I mean, I think every team, I mean, listen, Zach Cassian at Edmonton. I mean, Zach Cassian, you guys saw him in Vancouver. That when he's healthy and when he's playing the way he can play, he can skate, he can play on your top line or fourth line, and he can fight. He's not going to win all his fights, but he's going to show up and he's got that element of craziness to him and that sparkle in his eye that you really don't know what he's going to do. And that's a good thing, I believe, in the world of hockey. It keeps people on their toes. It keeps people on edge. That's what Tom Wilson has right now over the whole league, and that's why he's doing what he's doing, because it's effective. It gives him some room, and he's a 20-goal scorer. So, from his perspective, listen, I agree with what a lot of people are saying. If they're not going to discipline him the way that we feel he should be disciplined, then why would he stop doing what he's doing? He's going to continue to do what he's doing. But you know what? Listen, where's it going to come from? I think it's just going to come from players that take a recognition that that's what they need to do to stick around in the league. That's what I have to do to elevate my game and be different than 95% of the rest of the National Hockey League. So for any young kids out there, any guy that's looking to try and make a name for himself, I'm telling you right now, yes, they are trying to take fighting out of the game, but I promise you guys, every single team wants somebody that can scrap on their team.
Zach Cassian does have those wild eyes, doesn't he?
Yes.
I remember interviewing him once, and I nearly ducked. Yeah. I was like, whoa.
Where is this
just
interview?
A question.
Where is this interview going? I feel like it's not going in a good direction. He has the eyes.
Yeah. Louis, I wanted to ask you a question about the Edmonton Oilers, because the playoffs are quickly approaching and the Oilers will be part of them, unlike the Vancouver Canucks. Simple question for you. Are they deep enough to go on a run?
Of course they are. I don't know why anybody would think they're not from what they've done this year. And one of the biggest things for me is they haven't lost two in a row in over a month. You know, like, this is a team that just seems to always respond, seems to be able to always respond and come back. They're deeper than they've been in a long time, I guess, is how I'll answer that question. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' play is going to be vital, in my opinion. I just think he's so important on that second line to allow Draisaitl to stay with McDavid, which is really, when you have Draisaitl and McDavid together, good luck. You're going to have to deal with that line each and every time they're on the ice, and you're going to have to specifically deal with that line because they're that good. So if Nugent-Hopkins can really find chemistry, he's been playing with Cahoon and Yamamoto the last couple games, and Dave Tippett's liked what he's seen, gives him the flexibility to do that. At any time, he can drop down Draisaitl and have a 1-2 punch. Their defense core is getting sounder by the year. Mm-hmm. They're much more solid this year. Always goaltending is always going to be the question mark. Mike Smith's had a fantastic year, and Koskinen has settled into that backup role when he gets his chances. Yeah, you know what? Like any team, it'll be important to stay healthy. It'll be important to play the right way going into the playoffs and continue to play that way. But I see no reason, when you have number one and number two in the scoring race for the second year in a row, why you can't go on a run. You can't step in and get hot at the right moment and go on a run.
Could this be Nuge's last year with the Oilers? He's a pending unrestricted free agent. I know they technically can afford to bring him back, but I just wonder if, you know, they've got some other key free agents in some key positions, and I'm just wondering about their allocation. Could he be too expensive for them to keep?
Of course he could. There's no question he could go somewhere else. I honestly don't think he wants to. In my opinion, he's the longest tenured Oiler, and for good reason. And because of those things that I just mentioned, how versatile and how important he is to the team, I think that Nuge looks at the Oilers. I mean, if I was him, I would look at it and say, okay, wait a second. Where can I honestly go where I'm going to be in a better situation? Where am I honestly going to go where I'm kind of the third guy as far as responsibility goes? I mean, when we look at the Edmonton Oilers, we're always talking about McDavid and Draisaitl. Those two guys have to go. Your best players have to be your best players. He's in the perfect position right now where, number one, he's proven that he can be an excellent winger on either one of those two lines. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think a little better with Draisaitl than he is with McDavid, but he was still pretty good with McDavid, too. I mean, he can play with anybody.
Yep.
But in the other sense of it, he can go to center position. He plays the penalty kill. He's on one of the best power plays, when going the best power play in the National Hockey League, and he's a vital part of that, and he's always on that power play. So if he goes somewhere else, I just don't understand how that's going to benefit him. I really don't. I look at it as a win-win situation. I think for him and his career, you see so often, guys, players try and go somewhere else to get a little bit more money, and then they go there, and it's not the same situation. He's in a perfect situation here as far as I'm concerned. So if he was smart, I think he would get the deal done and he would stay in Edmonton. Because number one, the fans love him here. Number two, he's a crucial part of this community as far as the community work and charitable work goes. He's always involved, and that's why people love him so much. He's really, really kind of jumped into the community here, and he's just a really good human being. And he's an excellent hockey player. So in my opinion, for his best interest, I try and get that deal done. But listen, every player has to make that decision themselves. So the question you asked me, could he go somewhere else? 100%, he could.
Well, certainly not for a lack of opportunity in Edmonton. The guy's averaged over 20 minutes a game in each of the last three seasons, and he's almost up to 21 minutes this year. So
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if he goes somewhere else, I'm telling you right now, you go from a third top forward on your team to potentially a one or two, now all the responsibility is on you. Now it's all on you, and you have to perform. There's an extra set of pressures that come with that. And listen, some players love that. Some players want to – he's had to deal with that here, and he's dealt with it well. When he first stepped in the league as an 18-year-old, I mean, he had that. He was the best centerman on the team until Draisaitl and McDavid came along. Like, let's face it, he was. Nobody even came close to him. So – And he was admirable in that role. Like, he did a great job. He didn't have the support staff that I think McDavid and Draisaitl are now starting to have, including each other. But, you know, that's how it has. He did have Hall. He had Eberle. He had some good years in and out. And he was always the best centerman. And he had to learn the hard way in a real tough division and a tough conference and kind of develop those skills to be what he is now. I honestly think there's been a little cloud over him this year with the contract, which there typically is. And I think that it's affected his game a little bit. Whether or not he would admit that or not, that's just my own personal opinion. But that's just natural. I mean, that's for any player that goes into that situation. You think the deal's going to be done. You want to get it done. All of a sudden it goes south, and now you start to work back. I really do feel confident they can get a deal done. There's a deal to be had there, and I think it's a great fit and a great position for Nugent Hopkins to be in. I think you go somewhere else, and you know what? It's an entirely different situation, and there's always that unknown and uncertainty that you might go there and it just might not be as effective, and we've seen it with how many players throughout the league? We've also seen it go the other way. He could take off. So this is a decision, again, that he's got to make for himself. I personally think, though, there's no better place for him to be in Edmonton.
Oilers, Canucks, 6 o'clock tonight, not 7 o'clock, as I previously mentioned. I was looking at Saturday's game. Louis, enjoy the game tonight. Best of luck with everything moving forward. This was great. Had a lot of fun doing this. Let's do this again real soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care, all right?
Thank you, too. That's Louis DeBrusque, Oilers color analyst here on the Halford & Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Yes, Jason?
We've talked about the Toronto Maple Leafs having a lot of pressure on them to do something in the playoffs this season, and obviously they do, but the Oilers do, too.
Yes.
Especially when you look at some of these key free agents, Nugent Hopkins, Tyson Barrie, who's having a big season, and he's going to be like, yeah, I'm going to get a raise, right? Mike Smith, their goalie, he's a pending unrestricted free agent. So is defenseman Adam Larson, the guy they got in the Taylor Hall deal. So you've got their second line center, Nugent Hopkins, well, depending how you stack everyone up, right? Mm-hmm. Or their second line winger, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Plus two of two top four defensemen in Larson and Tyson Barrie. I know they've got some young defensemen on the way that they can maybe replace those guys, but for now they're pending on and their starting goalie. They need all those guys are going to want raises. Maybe Adam Larson won't deserve one, but Barry's going to deserve one based on the points he's put up this season. Mike Smith is going to want one after the season that he wants. If they bring him back, he's pretty old. And Nugent Hopkins, I don't think he's going to he's going to be very sought after, even in a tough market, if he does go to market.
It's a good thing they've got such a great contract on the books in Leon Draisaitl at a mere $8.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Just $2.5 million more than Louis Erickson. Okay. Lots more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. IMAC is coming up at 8 to talk all things Canucks. And a reminder that the Halford and Brough In the Morning Show is brought to you by Abel Auctions. You know it. You know it. If you're closing your business and you're not sure what all your assets are worth, let Abel Auctions help you out. Why? Because they've been helping BC business owners wind down and sell their business assets in an orderly manner for over 30 years. Whether you're a complete manufacturing plant, a restaurant, or a mechanical shop, or something entirely different, Abel Auctions has seen it and done it all. Email sales@ableauctions.ca and get your free of charge confidential consultation scheduled today. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. 8 o'clock hour. Ian McIntyre, all things Canucks on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. On a Thursday, Halford and Brough, Sportsnet 650. Reminder that Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by Abel Auctions. If you have business assets to sell or animatronic dinosaurs, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca.
Do you think they could sell Louis Erickson?
Where is Louis right now?
What does it I don't say mean like that a, he cannot get into the lineup?
I don't mean in like a metaphysical sense. Mm-hmm. Like, what's he thinking? What's he doing? Just like, where is he? Does he go to the games?
Yeah, probably.
You think?
Well, I wonder if he watches them at home. Do I need to be here?
I'm not getting in the lineup. You're playing everyone but me at this point. I mean, when we go back and look at the laundry list of randos that played this year.
Yeah.
It's going to rival.
The laundry list of randos.
Well, I mean, think I know. It is. We're going to look back, and we're going to look back like on those unforgettable days of 2016, 2017 when you look down and you're like, wow, I forgot about Griffin Molino. It's been a long time since I thought about Mike Zaleski.
Tyler Greivac is definitely in that conversation.
The laundry list of randos. That's what it is. And this season especially. This season had the added spice, if you will. That feels like a very aggressive term for what, for the waiver wire pickups.
Right.
Right?
Spice.
Spicy.
It's like if you go to Nando's and you're like, what's your least spicy chicken?
Yeah. And he points to the chart and there's VC at the bottom of it. That one. And right above it is Boyd. Would you like VC or Boyd spice? It's basically salt. That's it. There's no real spice to it per se, but they're on the chart. Okay, let's reset here really quickly what's coming up on the program. In the 8 o'clock hour, right at the top, Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet's very own. I call them all intrepid Canucks reporters because I feel like to do the job this year, you do have to be kind of intrepid.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could not be a beat reporter, especially this season.
Like I don't want to call him. I'm shy.
No, it's not that. It's just you feel if the grind is real for the players. Imagine you hop on the Zoom and you're like, I got to
come up with a question.
I got one, maybe two questions to get this right. And then you know that the players are like, I can just deflect this and get up and leave.
Yeah.
It's just a grind. Anyway, intrepid Canucks reporter Ian McIntyre will join us at 8.
My only question would be, I would ask everyone, how much of a grind is this for you?
Yeah, can you go out at night? Like, what is it? Because we were talking to Aaron Portsline earlier in the
week. Travis, I have a question for Travis Green. How many games are left?
Yeah, that would be a good one. We were talking to Portsline earlier in the week about the situation in Columbus, where he said, you know, a lot of guys don't really want to come here because the city's kind of, it's vanilla, it's bland, it's plain. You don't really know a lot about it until you get here and experience it. And he said part of the issue with Patrick Laine this season, as it relates to getting comfortable, is he can't do anything or go anywhere. Like, he's in Columbus, but when he's not at the rink,
he's basically locked in because the protocol.
He's just
so
playing
tight.
Video games all day. Actually, he's very comfortable.
Yeah, it's what he does. Yeah. He loves it. So we'll talk to Ian McIntyre at 8. Not about any of the stuff we just mentioned. The question we're going to ask IMAC, based on the Rangers getting rid of their president and general manager 4 years into the rebuild, is are the Vancouver Canucks patient or impatient? Because we went back and forth on this earlier. Because
I am 100% in the impatient category. I know that Jim Benning is still the general manager.
Okay, but quickly explain why impatient, then I'll quickly say why people say patient.
Because of the whole way they've gone about doing their business. Signing expensive free agents. Throwing money at a problem. Mm-hmm. That's exactly why.
Now, I don't agree with this, but if I'm going to play devil's advocate, I would 100% throw this out. They have the 11th longest tenured GM in hockey and the 8th longest tenured coach. So I would say if the Canucks were stacked up against, say, the Buffalo Sabres, who have gone through how many regime changes now? 3 general managers, 4 coaches?
Yep.
You would have to say, well, compared to them, the Canucks are very patient. They've stuck with Jim Benning and they've stuck with Travis Green. But at the same time, what you're bringing up is a totally valid explanation as to why they would be impatient.
And it is funny, though, because you go back and forth. Because I would say, okay, why is Jim Benning still the general manager? According to all reports, Trevor Linden left because he told ownership, man, it's going to take a few years longer. And Jim Benning said, no, it's not. Nope. No, it's not.
Because right now, here's an interesting thing as you compare what happened with Linden in the sort of breaking point with the organization. Is he said, oh, you know what? It's not time to put your foot on the gas. We need to stay the course.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that that's what Gorton and, to a lesser degree, Davidson were probably saying in New York.
Well, wasn't that what Ron Hextall was saying in Philly?
Stay the course.
Especially with regards to their young goalie, Carter Hart. Because I don't think Ron Hextall wanted to rush him.
He didn't at all.
And so, how's it looking for Carter Hart these days?
Well, it was a very tough year for Carter Hart after a great year last year.
Yeah. It's weird, though. So you can't really say what the right decision was then. All goalies struggle. Was he rushed into a position where he lost his game and started to panic because he wasn't prepared to deal with the ups and downs? Who's to say?
Now,
Not us out here in Vancouver.
No. Not at all. Now, coming up on the program, we're going to take a quick break, but I implore all of you, whether you're on your way to work or maybe you're dropping the kids off remarkably early at school, or maybe you've just got a long commute and you're going to be in the car, we've got something for you. Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic have a podcast, The Athletic Hockey Show Two-Man Advantage Podcast. Today, they had on NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, and among the pointed questions they asked of Bill Daly was about Jake Virtanen and the investigation into the sexual assault allegations. We've got the audio coming up next, so if you want to hear it, you're going to have to keep it right here. It's your home of the Vancouver Canucks. It's Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650. .45 on a Thursday. In case you guys want a little behind the scenes of how things work here at the Halford and Brough Show, Dom's last suggestion to me prior to coming back from break was, I'm tired. Halford, please just talk. That's how the magic happens here at Sportsnet 650. How you doing? You know what tomorrow is?
I'm busy trying to organize golf rounds on my phone.
We got it. It's just
working away here.
I'm sure there's an app for that that makes it easy.
Three dedicated guys here. One is booking golf tee times. The other one is tired and wants me to talk.
Booking golf tee times is hard work these days. It's hard to get a time.
I love the best part that no one else sees other than the people in this room is the, Dom, here's a podcast. Listen to the full 60 minutes and cut the best stuff in the next 3.
And do it quickly.
You know who never used to complain?
Oh, don't stop. Ian McClutchy.
Oh, he was a saint.
We called him Clutch because we liked him so much.
That's right.
He had a nickname.
It's true.
Dominic.
Sometimes we called him Clutch, but he wasn't Clutch. It just was a clever play on words more than anything else. He was actually the opposite.
I like all the listeners to text in to the Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650. Maybe just share some of your fond memories of Ian McClutchy and how much you loved him and how much you miss him.
Sure.
Maybe some Sarah McLachlan music underneath. I will remember you.
You will remember me.
Didn't we almost have it all?
It's true. Although I never really felt that way.
No.
In the clutchy era.
We didn't even come close, really,
didn't we almost
to having it all.
Didn't we almost have some? And even that was like, nope. Okay. We teased this going to break. Oh, by the way, and I said Friday, you know what happens on Friday. The tiredness hits different. So if you think you're tired today, you know about the Friday sleepies. You're just looking at me very upset right now.
No, I'm good.
Okay. We teased this going to break on their two-man advantage podcast. Pierre LeBrun and Scott Burnside of The Athletic had on NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. Bill Daly was asked several pointed questions by two guys that know the journalism game and know how to do the hockey reportage, and they've done it. They asked him about the current and ongoing investigation into Jake Virtanen's sexual assault allegations. Now, I had not heard this audio yet. I just caught wind that the podcast was out, so we wanted to get the audio up and for public consumption. We've had a brief synopsis of what was said. Let's let Daly speak, and then I'll address it on the other side, because there is something interesting here. Dom, take it away.
Well, I think the club was made aware of the situation relatively recently. Very recently. In turn, they made us aware of the situation. We discussed how best to handle that situation. That involved the club commencing an investigation. That's what they're doing. That's all I can say about it. I'm aware of the allegations. I'm not aware of any of the facts underlying the allegations or anything like that. So it would clearly be premature and improper for me to comment on something I really know nothing about.
Now, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because this is a dramatically different, in fact, it's an entire 180 from the way that the National Football League handles investigations and allegations of sexual assault. So, for example, the Houston Texans right now have a similar sexual allegations against their star quarterback, Deshaun Watson.
Right.
That entire investigation right now is not being led or spearheaded by the Houston Texans. It is coming from the National Football League. As a matter of fact, after the National Football League announced that they were taking the reins on the investigation through their personal conduct policy, the Texans released a statement saying that they were informed of that investigation and they were, quote, going to stay in close contact with whatever the league does.
Right.
Bill Daly said the exact opposite, that the league is aware of what the Canucks are doing, and the league is going to follow their lead. Now, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to go about this. I am certainly not vested enough in terms of knowledge.
This is
going to
turn
know.
Into a cop show. It's like, I got jurisdiction here.
Honestly, that's the one thing for me right now is it's very interesting. And
the league is the feds. They're the FBI.
And in the case of the NFL, yes. But in the case of the NHL, no. The NHL's front office, by that I mean Commissioner Gary Bettman and Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, it is fundamentally different approach. Okay. We didn't need that. I just think it's fascinating to see two leagues existing on not the similar planes. The NFL's bigger than the NHL. I think we can all agree to that. Mm-hmm. But you would think that there wouldn't be a polar opposite approach. You just think that everything was kind of streamlined, right? I mean, all leagues take, you know, cues and ideas from one another. But
I feel
this
the NFL has more experience investigating.
They also have more allegations to investigate, period.
I bet they've got a way bigger security team to investigate that sort of stuff. Yeah. Bill Daly also commented on the Vancouver Canucks schedule. I think we're all looking at this schedule right now and going, are they really going to play all these games?
Right.
Are they really going to play all these games against Calgary at the end of the season when the playoffs are supposed to be starting? So these two teams that are going to miss the playoffs are going to play these games May 16th, May 18th, and May 19th. What did Bill Daly have to say about that?
Yeah, that's our expectation. I mean, look, we we play full seasons. There's a lot of things that are triggered by teams playing less than the requisite number of games. We're not really that far outside of the window we had planned all along in terms of being within. So in that regard, I'm not sure it's any really different than a number of other scenarios we face every year with games that may not be meaningful to the final playoff picture.
I have been told that from a broadcast level, they've already worked out how these games are going to go. Like, they are operating as if there's no question whatsoever that those meaningless games, while the playoffs might be going on in other divisions, are going to happen. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be scaled back, and you're probably not going to get the same kind of production you might get from your typical all-Canadian matchup, but they are 100% happening. There's no way that they're not going to get everybody to 56 games right now. And, I mean, it is a fair point that Daly brings up. How different is it than playing out the string with two teams that have nothing to play for in an 82-game schedule? And it's a decent point. Now,
well, it's different because the playoffs could be going on at the same time.
Right.
And it's just weird.
It is. At the same time, it's weird in life in general. Like, they acknowledged at the beginning of the year.
The pandemic has been odd.
They acknowledged at the beginning of the year, like, there might be some situations that are very outside the box and not very common, and quite frankly, completely unique and will only happen this year. Mm-hmm. But we have to acknowledge that they're probably going to go ahead and happen this year.
Do you think Alex Edler plays those games? You know, like, wait, and I bring him up, but I could bring up a bunch of guys. Like, there would be nothing to play for. Nothing.
From a player's perspective.
Nothing.
From a league perspective, it'd be like, well, the Canucks could fall up or down the standings with relation to draft ranking. But that, the players don't care about that.
No.
Alex Edler doesn't care if the Canucks pick sixth or fourth. Like, it doesn't matter to him. Mm-hmm. He might not even be here next year, right? For them, in those games, it does afford you the opportunity to do a lot of things lineup-wise, because one, the games don't mean anything, but two, there's not going to be any fans in attendance, obviously. How many people are going to be watching? Like, for me, all due respect that I work for the home of the Canucks, if there's a playoff game on same time.
I know. Well, that's what I'm talking about.
I'm watching playoff hockey.
Yeah.
You could get away with a lot. You could play with a plastic stick.
The playoffs are also on Sportsnet.
Right. You watch them. Right. You could play with no, like, dull blades, no laces in your skates. Try new things.
Salvin and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Ian McIntyre is coming up next on the show, and we'll ask him, in the wake of the firings in New York, here was a rebuild that, by all accounts, was going remarkably well. I thought Rangers fans were very pleased with Jeff Gorton and the job he'd done. Getting returns for some of the veterans like Ryan McDonagh, Callahan.
JT Miller.
JT Miller wasn't one of those guys that was kind of like had lots of playoff experience. We're getting older and
he was a young veteran, right? Let's call him that.
I don't think he's part of that equation, but regardless, they added all sorts of talent in the wake of, in the way of free agency and free agent signings that have gone well. Artemi Panarin, was he expensive? Absolutely. Is he still a pretty good player?
Yep.
Yes. Adam Fox, maybe Jacob Trouba's been a little bit disappointing, and maybe their lottery picks have been a little disappointing in Kaapo Kakko and Alexis Lafreniere, but they're still talented young players, and there's a lot of optimism. And yet, Jeff Gorton was fired. Mm-hmm. And Chris Drury, I believe, is doing media right now. And here's a quote. Greg Wyshynski on Twitter has it. Chris Drury says that the Rangers making the playoffs this season wasn't the expectation and wasn't the mandate, but that it's, quote-unquote, time to make the next step. So maybe Gorton and John Davidson, the president, who were both fired, maybe they were saying to ownership, they're like, yes, we like where we are, but we have to be careful. We can't go ahead too quickly or there's a risk of screwing this whole thing up. And how do you screw things up in the NHL? A very good way is to add pricey, aging free agents whose contracts become anchors almost right away. So we're going to ask Ian McIntyre about that and juxtapose it against the Canucks situation, where you could make the argument that the Canucks have been impatient in their retool or rebuild, but you could also say that they've been patient in that Jim Benning is still the general manager. Ian McIntyre is coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
If you're on your way to work, it is the morning commute, and maybe you don't necessarily like where you're going and you want to change, we have something for you. AE Concrete Products in Surrey is hiring general laborers right now. What's more, along with the gig, training is provided. If you want to change, send your resume now to jobs@aeconcrete.com.